Hello, and welcome to the Indie Film Review.
Hello, and welcome to the Indie Film Review.
Hello, and welcome to the Indie Film Review. This is fun. Now I remember why we do this podcast. Hey, everybody, that's Dan.
This podcast is the bane of my existence.
Oh, Jesus.
Just kidding.
Yeah, Dan is contractually obligated to do the podcast. He actually doesn't want to do it at all.
What an interesting dynamic. It's like, yeah. Jared just throws movies at me every week. I'm like, leave me alone.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. So on this show, we like to watch independent films and review them. What a novel concept. And,
wow. Well, I mean, it is not that novel because not that many podcasts are doing what we do.
Yeah, there's maybe at least one other that I could eventually find that...
And they probably suck compared to us.
A lot of them go into, like, the film industry and, like, how to make a film.
Oh, who cares?
None of them actually cover the films.
Okay, listen. Do you have a camera?
Mm-hmm.
Then you know how to make a film.
What?
That's how fucking easy it is.
You're
that's
right,
why
you're
it's
right.
So fun to shit on films, because it's so fucking easy to make them.
I don't think it's that simple, Dan. I don't think it's that simple.
I make films all the time. I'll throw mine out into the ether and be like, hey, I made the best film. What?
What you do in the bathroom does not count as
film. As indie film, are you sure?
No matter how many times you film it and send it to me. This is art, okay? I make art in my office, all right? We got a lot of paperwork in there.
Oh, that was a good joke.
That was a good joke. So, yeah, we review movies. One thing I want to bitch and moan at is, so me and Dan want to review The Lighthouse. And,
really bad.
And I went to go see it recently, and it was sold out. This, like, indie movie. I guess it's because it's got, like, William Dafoe, and it's made by A24. That's the only thing I can think of. It's like...
Well, Robert Pattinson.
Yeah, Robert
Pattinson. That Twilight draw on it.
People like him, too. And I'm reserving my judgment. I want to see him act in this film before I'm like...
I read an article that compared it to, like, the unease of The Shining.
Really?
So that kind of gave me, like... A raging cinema.
Shine on.
Shine on.
A raging cinema. I just want to know why they spilled those beans, you know?
Why'd you spill your beans? Such a good trailer. It's one of the best trailers I've seen in a long time, for sure.
Go see the trailer of The Lighthouse if you want to know what we're talking about. Okay, anyways, the actual film we're here to review is called...
Daughters of the Dust.
I like how we both said it at the same time. That was fun. Daughters of the Dust, 1991, it says here on IMDb. And this film is, it's like a surreal journey into, it's like a slice of life into the lives of these Georgia people called the Gullah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I guess that's
well, South Carolina and Georgia.
Yes. And I want to preface by saying I do not know anything except for what I've watched from this film and, like, minor research. I've never even heard of any of this, so this is pretty fascinating to me. But it's about African Americans that came over from Africa that were enslaved and brought there. And I guess that was one of the spots where they would bring them over. And
it was called Igbo Landing. Igbo is a tribe from Africa.
Yes. So it's about the descendants of that who stayed in that
after,
area.
50 years after World War II, or no, 50 years after the Civil War, my bad.
World War II?
My bad. History class was weird. I know both of them were pretty bad about killing people and whatnot. One was about killing people, one was about owning people. And...
Just after the Cold War.
Is it getting hot in here, or is...
Hey, that's my joke.
No, so it's 50 years after the Civil War, and so the descendants from these freed slaves are still in this this commune, essentially. It's called Ebo Landing. It's an island off the coast of South Carolina, essentially.
Mm-hmm. And there, so like, black men can now be more free because it's after the Civil War. And it's still probably bad. There's still some badness there.
Oh, absolutely.
The South is still there. And they're having to, like, assimilate into them being defeated.
So basically, you've done my job so far and explained the movie, but I want to push forward the fact that this Ebo Landing is kind of portrayed as a utopia for them.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's essentially all this is it's a slice of life movie about these people who live in this African-American utopia, but... Well, one of them thinks it's a utopia. The others are like, I want to move mainland and progress and follow my dreams. And that's where the big conflict rises. It's like there's a faction that wants them to stay at Ebo Landing and there's a faction that wants to go forth and progress.
Yeah. Well, and it's all about living in the past or tradition.
Yes.
Or moving forward towards the future and surviving and living.
And there are so many conflicts that revolve around that.
Yes.
And Jared...
Yeah, I guess let's get into the questions.
Did anything in this movie strike you as mundane? Because it's a slice of life movie, and typically these have the ability to get a little bit monotonous because you're just, you know, experiencing what they experience.
I went through such a range of emotion.
Mm-hmm.
It was from like... I was interested to, this is kind of boring, to I'm mystified. Like, I feel like I'm in a dream.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what's happening. And they're like, oh, I get it. And then I'm just all over the place.
I agree. There were some lulls in this movie. But quite honestly, this is probably one of the most beautiful films I've ever seen. Visually. It's... Yeah. Absolutely gorgeous to look at, even if
visually,
you're fucking
this movie
bored.
Destroys. That's why I picked this film. I saw the trailer and I was like, oh, I want to watch this.
It's crazy awesome.
Uh-huh.
But it's just a long drama, and you get to know the mentalities of all these characters. And whenever you really think about the way that they're thinking, it's a very hard decision to make, to either stay in this utopia or to go elsewhere. Like, I was for both sides.
Mm-hmm.
And that rarely happens in a movie. Like, I felt the pull of each one of the sides. I'm like, man, this is pretty intense.
Mm-hmm. And there's so many different clashes between... They have...
Lots of different characters. Yeah, you're right. Lots of different characters are in conflict, and they handle that well. Like, I was surprised at how many conflicts there were and how well they were spaced out and how they were resolved or how they weren't resolved.
Yeah, like there's a conflict of religion, of a woman's independence and marital issues. There's the conflict of sisters between each other and
estrangement,
mother and daughter.
Yeah.
And past and present and your the culture you came from versus the culture, you know, that you want to assimilate to. And there's so much going on.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying it handles all of this 100% all the time, but when it does, it's pretty amazing. It's pretty cool. That being said, Dan, do you feel like this is a hard movie to watch?
Define hard.
It would be difficult to recommend this to a normal human being.
Well, like yes and no. Person. I don't think so. I think I could... Okay, let me put it to you this way. It was not a hard movie to watch. Because, in terms of traditional narrative, yes, absolutely. It's hard to
watch.
That's what
I'm saying. This movie does not follow a traditional narrative. But yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so it doesn't follow a traditional narrative. That being said... I know the type of people who would want to watch this. Like, I have at least three friends that I'm like, you guys need to check this out.
Awesome. That's great. Because I just feel like if I went to work and tried to recommend this movie...
Oh, no. To a weird old normie, absolutely not. But to somebody who, like, appreciates visual art, absolutely, yes. Like, if you want to watch a really cool film about... the African-American culture and how it has transformed since the Civil War, watch this movie and just be taken aback by the amazing visuals. It's... like, the South Carolina coastline in this movie is it's a siren call. Like, you can't stop looking at the TV or whatever you're watching it on as soon as you see the beach. And the beach happens a lot.
So, yeah, I'd like to get into the film.
You'd like to get into the film.
Dan, please, for the love of God, can we just get into the... I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. Dan's preventing us.
You shut the fuck up.
Oh, no! There are many main conflicts in this movie.
So let's actually, down them one by one.
We could, yes. What did you feel about the acting in this movie before we get into it, actually? Because
I want to say, because I don't know anything about the acting, but I want to say they didn't hire professional actors.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like that is the film's... It works for and against the film, depending on where we are.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a very famous Italian neorealism film. Is it neorealism or just realism? Italian realism? I don't remember.
Neo-realism.
Film school was so long ago. But it's The Bicycle Thieves. Have you seen that?
I've heard of it. I haven't
seen
it.
So basically, Vincenzo... No, not... Fuck, I forgot his name already. Man,
Vincenzo,
I'm butchering.
Baloney.
Yeah, Vincenzo this Italian director, he just hires people off the street to do this narrative, and it's
nice.
An amazing narrative. And I felt vibes from that, but also I felt like certain characters weigh it down a little bit to where I'm like, well, okay.
I thought the weakest performance was from the character of Yellow Mary.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but she really took me out of the film.
Really?
Big time. And some of the other acting was very over the top and stylized. It kind of gave me the vibe of like a Korean or a Japanese film. You know, uh-huh. they make the big gestures. And so I was kind of like used to that. It was almost like a play. So I was kind of into that. But for some reason, her performance really took me out of it. And she might be the most well-known out of
yeah.
all the actresses and actors in this movie. But I wasn't too taken aback by how the acting was very performative and what's a good word to describe that? Loud? I don't know.
Well, performative is
expressive.
A good word for it. But yeah, expressive.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're very, very out with it. They're very...
I want you to really feel how I'm feeling through any means necessary.
Yes.
Not just normal acting.
There was a minor character that whenever she said her line, I'm like, that girl took a long time to know what that line was, and it still didn't come out good.
Oh.
It was like towards the beginning. And I'm like, okay.
Well, so there's an unborn child who's narrating, and it gave
yes.
me strong vibes of Lone Wolf and Cub.
Yeah.
It's this samurai movie where this little kid narrates. He goes, "My father has taken me on a journey. He has killed 1,000 people." And it's just like, you're like, oh, little kid, please stop. This is so bad. So that was silly, but also kind of charming of how like goofy it was. And
well,
then
because in this, okay, so... Are we getting into this?
Oh, yeah. We can
so
get into it.
In the story, sure. Basically, the unborn child is a... It's implied that her mother was raped.
Yes.
And the unborn child is like... She's going to come into this world, but everybody's kind of having a hard time with it. Like, dad's mm-hmm. having a hard time. They're still accepting her because the story is Yellow Mary was also raped, and she left the tribe.
Yes.
And because she left the tribe, everybody kind of shunned her. And now that Yellow Mary's coming back into the tribe, she is shunned. She's like, well, you shouldn't be here. You're dirty, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a big conflict at the end that the one who's currently pregnant, she's like, how am I different from her? Why are you mm-hmm. treating me well and her not well? Like, what happens
yeah.
if I leave? Are you going to be doing the same thing to me? And
exactly.
That was very interesting, but that we'll talk about that more, but bringing up the idea of the unborn child, it makes the narration so much more upsetting whenever you figure out why the child is unborn yet, or like who this character is.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes her monologues very, not profound, but like very
mystical.
Yeah, mystical almost. And mystical
is a good word for it. What's weird too is the little girl is guiding everyone through the story, and she shows up. She's there.
Yeah.
Even though she is unborn, she's the girl with the blue ribbon. There's a really
fucking cool shot. It's probably my favorite in the movie. Whenever Mr. Sneed or whatever, the camera guy, he's making everybody, all the men, pose for a picture, and then he looks at the camera, and the little girl is there, and he's like, "Wait, what?" And then he looks, and then she's not there. I'm like, "Fuck yeah, that was awesome."
By the way, I love Mr. Sneed. Loved all of the people coming from America. There were like the Christian lady, Mr. Sneed, with the kaleidoscope, and when they were talking
Yellow
about
Mary
that,
and her unnamed partner, like it seemed like weird. She was lesbian.
It was just like her friend who had no lines. She was just there to like look cool. She did, but she barely said anything. That was kind of bizarre.
I got the implication that they were lovers or something.
Oh, okay.
But I'm not sure.
Also, so you have all those characters that we just said, they're all on a boat and they're heading to where the Gullah people are. They're going to the coast to visit them, right?
Mm.
I almost felt like when I first started watching this that like they were in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And they are I'm sorry, that the people in the boat were in the present and that the Gullah people were in the past. That was a story that we were being told from a long time ago, and they were coming to revisit when that had happened to them.
Right.
But then the two worlds collide and they show up. And I'm like, oh, this isn't the past. Okay, this is happening simultaneously. And I feel like that's all part of this weird dream that like this movie made me feel. This film is very dreamy and surreal to the point of like you said, with like a little girl showing up. You're like, I don't know if this is she a ghost? She's here, but not here. And she's like with them, but she's not. And she kind of is because she's in her mother's belly. So right. There's a lot going on.
I have to, like, now that we keep talking about it, it's like, I almost want to recommend it to people. Like, you know what I mean? It's a nice hidden gem that's just on Netflix. I'm like, I probably never would have heard of it had you not said we should watch this.
Mm-hmm. I will say I tried to watch this with my significant other, and she checked out pretty hard going into it. She was like, I am so bored by this movie. And I'm like, okay. I think we almost got to 30 minutes, because this film is not told in a linear fashion at all. The film jumps all over the place. Sometimes it's just showing you visuals, and it will go from like one story to the next simultaneously. Like me figuring out that, so there's the wife and husband, right? Mm-hmm. Who have this unborn child, and me even trying to figure out that she is cheating on her husband was kind of difficult, but it's all there. The information is there in the pictures that you're seeing, but it's so stylized. I'm just like, what is going on? And
I don't think she's cheating on the husband. I literally think she was raped, because the line of dialogue...
They say that later, yes.
The line of dialogue in there is talking about how the black woman is just something to be used by the world. Which reminded me of a book that I teach in high school. It's called Their Eyes Were Watching God. And it has very, very similar sentiments. And I might actually find a copy of this movie and use it as a companion piece of my class, because I don't think there was anything wrong with this movie. I could probably show this to teenagers.
They would
probably hate it, but it would be a nice companion piece, I think.
They definitely laugh at one scene, though. So there is a scene where we've established this relationship with the wife, and the wife doesn't want to tell her husband about the rape, because it would just hurt their marriage. But this is already hurting their marriage, you know? Like, he thinks, like, are you cheating on me? What's wrong? Like, I just want to know what's going on. And there's a scene where the husband, like, there's a dude in a suit who's, like, walking, you know? And he looks like he's sneaking. And then the husband jumps out and attacks him. And the film becomes Miami Connection.
Yeah.
And this is such a bizarre... They like are play fighting, but not really. But then they're not fighting, but then they are. And it's like... he jumps on his back. And it imagine like a very huge man. And then a small man is like jumping on top of him trying to beat him up. It was so weird. And then they're doing all these bizarre moves.
That scene did kind of take me out of the film. Like, what the fuck am I watching?
The only conclusion I could draw is that that is the man who raped his wife, right? And that's why he's beating him up. Like, what else is that guy important for?
I'm not going to say I disagree with that, because a lot of this movie is left to interpretation. But
so weird.
my initial thought was it was a white dude or something. I don't know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. No, he wasn't white. I don't think. Oh, you think? Oh, no, I don't.
The person who raped her, I think. But I don't
know. No, I don't think so. I do not think so. I think it was somebody in that group, in that community that had done that. For sure.
Well, then it might have been him. Because he's pitched as this person who is... of the world and of like kind of this supernatural world almost like mm-hmm. he's a elder much like Granny. So in the Nana Pezant. So it's the Pezant family that we're all talking about. And there's a matriarch in the family, and that's kind of where we get the old traditions versus new progress and religion versus paganism.
Mm-hmm. Or hoodoo.
Or hoodoo. Hoodoo voodoo that you done did.
What song is that?
Voodoo People by Prodigy.
Oh. And I like how they try to mix both. They like Christianity and the hoodoo together.
Yeah.
And they have that scene where the grandmother is like, kiss this Bible with the hoodoo
that
on it.
Scene was... Oh my God.
It was awesome.
I've been in so many situations like that because my family's super religious. Just, it was so intense to watch because in the, like, what happened? So you have the grandma's saying, kiss this charm on this Bible. Mm-hmm. And the charm has generations of hair in it. Like generations of the, like a physical, tangible thing that has been passed down from generation to generation. And she's like, kiss it. For good luck in this new world. And the Christian woman who has come back to visit is bawling her eyes out because she can't bear to watch this heresy being performed by her own family.
So the big thing is, she is saying, if you do this, you are taking a part of me with you forever.
Exactly. Exactly. And that should be respected.
And the Christian lady's like, no, that cannot be, because when you die, you're supposed to go to heaven. You're not supposed to stay with people as a spirit. So it's in direct conflict with her religious beliefs that she has now. But she does eventually do it because she's understanding that it's not, it's more a part of, like, you're going to be leaving your mom and she's not coming with you. She's going to die in this land because this is where she was raised. And she just wants you to remember her. So she's like, okay, I will do this for my mother. And it was a really beautiful scene. And that's a great way to summarize this entire film, is like the conflict between these characters. It's always multi-level. There's always like a lot of stuff going on. For instance, Yellow Mary. I don't know if I just missed it, or maybe they didn't explain it well enough, but did you know that she is a prostitute?
They didn't explain it well enough, but I knew something was up with her.
Yeah. It is implied that she is a prostitute. So she went to the New World.
It's clicking. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
And then apparently after that was over, she's like, well, what am I going to do? And she prostitutes herself. I don't know how she becomes wealthy, though. That I'm not sure about. And that's why when she comes back, they feel like she has changed.
She might be part of a brothel. Mm. And like that costume was just of the time. Like, that's how the ladies dressed in the brothels. That would make sense.
What is interesting, though, is out of all the characters to leave, she is the one that stays.
Yeah.
Because she's like, I am done doing that. So her, the mother and the husband who are having the kid, they all stay, and all the rest leave. Well, the grandmother stays, obviously. The
grandmother stays, and then there's also one of the sisters, her daughter. So one of the granddaughters stays with the Cherokee boy.
Yes.
I don't want to say Cherokee.
A whole other story with this Native American guy that not very well explained. Because
the film jumps all over the place. Like, there's this really awesome scene where the girl who's in love with this kid, they're like 18, they're each, you know, of age to, like, you know, have a burgeoning youthful relationship. Uh-huh. She's reading what this guy wrote to all of her cousins. Mm-hmm. And it's a beautiful scene, and it's not talked about again until, like, the very end. Like, you know that he wants her to stay, and the payoff is at the very end, and she runs away from the boat, like, last minute, and it breaks her mom's heart.
But it's such a dreamlike thing of just this guy shows up on the horse, he says
a beautiful nothing. Fucking horse.
Yeah.
White horse with a black, oh my god, white horse with, like, a black mane and black tail. It was such a beautiful horse.
And then she runs, gets on the horse, and her mother's freaking out. And her mother, the character that plays the mother of that daughter, she's great too.
Yeah.
Because she is, like, all for going to the new world. And she has a great line where she's saying
something. She's like the peacekeeper, like, too.
Yeah.
Like, she's like, let grandma do her thing and you do your Christian thing and we can all be friends.
Well,
like,
she's also kind of like a shit starter, too.
Yeah.
That's true. Because she's like, no one's going to tell me how I'm going to feel anymore.
Yeah.
And that's, like, the big thing that she's ready for in the new world of, like, this independence that they're going to have. And I thought that was really cool. But then, like we said, there's always two different sides to it. Like, how other characters are telling here, well, okay, you might have that, but you don't know how it's going to be over there. It's not going to be this fantasy that you've built up in your head. Like, right. It's still going to be just as hard as it is here, you know, over there, too. Another thing I liked is the, them, cause this movie is kind of like a fantasy of a fantasy, because where they are at is almost like this, you know, this beautiful community that they're in, where they're just kind of living on the beach and they're all together. And then there's the fantasy of, moving into the mainland, into this other culture where, like, they get to sit in chairs, they get to have toys, like really basic things that everyone takes for granted now. But there's a beautiful scene where all of the girls are just taking turns practicing sitting in a chair.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is exciting and fun to them. And they're having so much fun because there are no chairs where they live. They all sit on the floor. And I'm like, that is such an interesting thing to me. I thought it was so fascinating. When, like, they're playing with the umbrella, and just that beautiful scene of the three girls on the beach playing with the umbrella, or how they mess
basically
around with the camera and everything.
Any time that the camera cuts to the coastline, it's the best thing.
Yeah.
It's seriously. So awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime that Granny opens up her mouth is perfect. Like, she does not have a wasted bit of monologue or dialogue.
Oh, yeah, she's the best actress in the whole film. She's fantastic.
Absolutely. Like, she says things like, it's up to the living to visit the dead.
Yeah.
Because the dead won't do it. And I'm like, that's such a profound statement, but it's super obvious. But I would have never thought of that.
Mm-hmm. So that one character that we were talking about earlier, the male elder, I thought it was funny that his name was Belial.
Yeah.
Which is, isn't that like a demon's name?
Yeah, it's a demon's name.
Belial. It makes me think of...
Diablo, too.
Diablo. Belial rides in the east. You must find the Herodric Cube.
Holy shit. God, now I want to play that game. The Horadric Cube.
Oh,
you
yes.
You must put Mort's leg in the Horadric Cube and get the yes. cow level.
I have found both of the Horadric Cubes. They're in my pants.
Stay a while and listen.
Stay a while and listen.
Okay, so one more thing I want to talk about I just thought of. So there is a really interesting story where one of the daughters, I believe, is talking about how the first people showed up. This is one of their myths and lore, you know, of the Gullah people. And they had shown up on the ships, the slave ships. And all the slave people, they all walked out into the new land and they didn't know what to do. They were just staring at this bizarre new place that was so different from where they used to live. And then they all turned around and just started walking back onto the ocean. And it said that they were walking on water.
And as she's explaining this, because she's telling this story to her newborn baby, her husband comes out and walks on the fucking water out to this statue that we keep seeing floating. Like, it keeps cutting to the statue floating for some reason.
Yeah, this wooden statue of a man in chains.
Yeah.
And it was really cool.
Oh, it was awesome. I completely forgot about
that
until you brought it up.
Yeah. The sad reality of that is that didn't happen. And the elder is like, no one can walk on water. It's just a story. Like, all of those people died. And before we even got to this scene, I was trying to research more about this place. Mm-hmm. And apparently there was a massacre.
Shit.
Something similar to that, yes, where either a ship had crashed or something like that, and a lot of people had died. So I believe that's the reference that they are making. But they had turned it into like a mythology of like these slaves went back home.
Does happen. Like things like that happen. And these cultures, I don't want to call them pagan cultures, but like every culture, every religion, they make some form of mythology around happenstances that are gruesome.
Mm-hmm. And I want to end on this. So Yellow Mary is talking with the pregnant woman, and she is telling her about a box that is basically with them. And she says, hey, not that kind of box.
She says, you opened it, we came.
God damn it. God damn it.
Every time. I'm sorry, go.
The box is, it's more like a suitcase, I think she describes it. And in this suitcase is memories that are bad that she wants to remember, but not all the time.
Mm.
So she compartmentalizes them. She puts them away to be reviewed when she wants to see them.
Yeah.
So she's not going to forget that. She's not throwing these memories away, but she's putting them in a place that they will not hurt her anymore. And when she wants to go and check them out and to understand what had happened during that time, she can go and view them almost like scientifically, it made it seem like.
Yeah.
And that is the past. That is things that have happened to them, all the bad things that have happened. She's like, don't forget about those things. Bring them with you, but don't have them like negatively affect your life.
I like how...
And I'm like, that is so fucking good.
It is. It is so fucking good. But I like how it's so symbolic that you have, you know, these people. So she got that habit from Granny because Granny has her own box.
Yes.
She has a tin can.
A box
so,
of memories.
Yeah.
That they make fun of.
Exactly.
But yet
so,
she's doing the same thing.
Yellow Mary, she goes out and she experiences the new world in a bad way and she ends up having to be a prostitute. But then you have Viola, the one who converts to Christianity. So she goes out, converts to Christianity, and brings back a new box to make new memories. She brings back a fucking camera.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Dude, mind blown. Oh, shit. Yeah, yeah. So, I'm glad we watched this movie.
I am too. I was pleasantly surprised. I wouldn't call it a favorite movie, but it is in the top 10 in terms of most beautiful movies I've ever seen.
It's a powerful, difficult watch.
Yes, absolutely.
That is what I will say. Okay.
All right.
I believe we're at the end.
Yes. Please find us where you're going to find us, at Twitter at Indie Film Pod. You can find us on Instagram at Indie Film Review Pod. You can email us at theindiefilmreview@gmail.com. If you want to submit to us your film that is definitely as good as the one we just watched, please do so.
Please send us an email. The best thing you can do for our show is to tell other people about it. Word of mouth is the strongest way for us to get more listeners, and we'd really appreciate it if
you you indie film people. Mm-hmm. If you like indie film, I guarantee you that you know somebody who likes indie film.
Yeah, you nerd.
And they might like podcasts more than you. So tell them about us.
Please. We're also on Podbean. I don't know if you said that.
No, I did not.
Indiefilmreview.podbean.com. That's where we are hosted, and we are super duper hosted by the Necropodicon Network.
The Necropodicon Network. Necropodicon Network is a lovely network where you can get D&D podcasts. It's a sexy network where you can get movie podcasts. It's a I'm going to fuck this network where you can get comedy podcasts.
Well, guys, I love you all. Thank you for listening. And Dan, you have the final word.
Guys, I'm going to double down on this whole thing of, you know, telling people about us, getting us followers. You are our mighty, mighty, mighty disciples who can be fishers of men.
You beautiful person, you. Do you like podcasts? Well, that's a stupid question, because of course you do. Hi, my name is Harley, and I'm from the Necropodicon Network. I'm here invading your personal space because I wanted to invite you to come check out our shows. Oh man, we have a whole bunch, just like a big old assorted bag of candy type of deal. We have true crime, comedy, TTRPGs of varying kinds, movie reviews. The list goes on, I just don't have enough spit in my mouth for that. You can find all these shows and more on our website, necropodicon.com. We also have cast and crew profiles for every show on the network. What that means is, you get to see our beautiful faces. For free! The website is constantly being updated, so come on over and have a good time. What are you waiting for? No, seriously, what are you waiting for? You're on your phone, right? Or computer? All you have to do is, I'll let you figure it out by yourself.